Blog Talk Radio.
Doing it. Oh, okay. I think I was on in two different places. How weird was that, guys? Welcome. welcome to another installment of Let's Talk TV Live on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Barbara Barnett. I am the executive editor of Blog Critics Magazine, and I am joined this evening with my Once Upon a Time panel, Jerome Wetzel TV. Hi, Jimmy.
Hello.
And a Chrissy, our heart radio. Chrissy, how are you?
Hi. Good. Excited to be here.
Yeah. And we're, you know, they're both writers for Blog Critics, and they have their other things as well. We did not go live with the new site last week. Oops. No, we had a couple of small glitches that we wanted to make everything perfect. So it looks like we're going to go live this week. So keep your eyes open, guys.
I'm going to have to. I was wondering what was going on. I figured there was a glitch or two.
There was a glitch, and we want to release a perfect site. So, yes. And welcome to everybody that's listening live and listening in the chat room. We had a ton of people listen after the episode last week. Over 1,000 people downloaded the episode, which was kind of cool. Hopefully lots of people will listen in. I kind of thought last week on a whim that we would do it was like completely spontaneous. First I have to say a couple of different things. I don't know if either of you guys are at all watching Family Tree on HBO.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I DVR'd it, though, but I haven't got to it yet. Is it good?
It is. I really like Chris O'Dowd, and I adore her, who stars in it. He was in Bridesmaids. And very charming Irish actor. And it's by Christopher Guest, who is famous for wonderful movies like A Mighty Wind and Best in Show. And essentially, this is Spinal Tap, sort of, although that was Rob Reiner's, but Christopher Guest was a writer on that. And I actually this morning interviewed the other executive. Christopher Guest is one executive producer. And Jim Pittock, who's in the show, and I don't know, did you either of you guys ever see Best in Show, the movie?
I've seen some of his other ones, but not that
okay.
one.
So Jim Pittock is the British guy who is in all of the Christopher Guest movies. He's kind of a very straight-up seeming British guy. And he's the executive producer and co-writer with Christopher Guest. And I interviewed him this morning. So that was a lot of fun. And we were playing telephone tag for a little bit, but we finally caught up with each other. And that interview will go live in a couple of days, I am hoping.
Cool.
I saw Star Trek Into Darkness yesterday.
Oh, how is it? I'm anxious to see it.
Don't tell me anything. I haven't seen it yet.
I am not going to
say it. But I'm such a huge Trek fan.
Really, I was actually trying to write a review, and it's really, really hard to write a review of this movie without spoiling it, because one of the reveals in the movie, one of the early reveals, is actually a huge spoiler, and you don't want to go into the movie spoiled. So, all I will say is that it is as good or if not better. I love the story. I loved the echoes back to the original Star Trek.
Good. They did do that. I was worried that they were not going to do that.
I heard it's full of them, but that's all I've heard.
It's actually, there are some references to a particular episode, which it's not a spoiler to tell you, that there is a Tribble involved.
In a very cool way.
And it's not a spoiler to tell you that. Benedict Cumberbatch, who I generally, you guys know, I'm not, and I'm going to get killed for this because so many of my fans are fans of his Sherlock. I'm not a huge, huge, huge Benedict Cumberbatch fan. I like Sherlock. I like the BBC Sherlock. I am not a huge Benedict Cumberbatch fan. I've seen him. I saw him in, before Sherlock, I saw him in The Last Enemy, the BBC Masterpiece Theater production called The Last Enemy. And which, by the way, see it. It's really, really good. A certain actor who plays Rumpelstiltskin is pretty amazing in it. So you should see it.
I guess I must put that on my list.
It is. I think it's like a four or five part, I want to say. Four or five parts.
Oh, Lord.
Maybe it's three parts. I don't know. It's a Masterpiece Theater thing. And it's available on Netflix. And so I'm not a huge Benedict Cumberbatch fan. I thought he was fabulous in this movie. I really did. I thought he was fabulous.
Could you see it again, do you think, if you saw it? Is it like a movie that is just like you close your mind and you're just like, oh, my God, I gotta go see it again?
I'm like a huge Star Trek fan. I grew up on the original series. I did. I grew up on it. And my first TV crush was Ilya Kuryakin from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Uh-huh. David McCallum, NCIS is David McCallum.
Wow.
And my second TV crush, my second TV boyfriend, was Mr. Spock. So
Leonard Nimoy, funny.
I was a little girl, and I was like really hooked. See, the thing is, Mr. Spock and Ilya Kuryakin were both sort of tortured heroes.
Yes, they were, I would say. and hence your love for tortured heroes.
Yeah, he's got this inner angst. Chrissy starts reading my novel.
Yes, and oh my God, I'm like halfway through. I'm halfway through what you sent me, and I just did something. I will promise you, I will, as soon as I get up,
yeah,
I'm going to finish reading it. I like it. It's trying to get used to the way they talked and stuff. Like, I need to reread it. I mean, it was good. It's good. It's going to be very interesting. I'm anxious to see where it goes from where I'm at right now. I finished the 18, whatever.
With Arthur Conan Doyle, speaking of Sherlock Holmes. The first chapter is written as an extremely stylized, with a very stylized language. The rest of the novel doesn't follow that sort of very, it follows Victorian language. It takes place in 1837, 1842, 1902, 1870, and 2013. And
up to the 2013 portion.
Right.
That's where I left off.
Right. So there's this, and it goes back and forth in these four different timelines. And the very first chapter, the one that you read, I think, is a very specific, highly stylized, distant, third person, like omniscient voice. It's sort of almost as if it's a newspaper, like a magazine coverage of it. Anyway, but there's a very tortured hero that is in this novel, of course.
Yes.
And we'll see if you can cast him when you read the next chapter.
Okay. I can't wait. I'm excited. It's very cool.
Just based on the description of my characters, you could probably cast them, the two characters. Anyway, so Mr. Spock was my second TV crush. And so I really thought when the 2009 movie came out, I was really worried that it would be very Kirk-centric and that whoever was playing Spock was, and J.J. Abrams, wasn't going to capture what I thought was Spock's inner turmoil. Because I thought Spock was a far more interesting character than Kirk, even at the age of, like, 9.
Right.
I thought, you know, so, but that is brilliant. I mean, he has it. Without making it parody, without making it mimicry, he is Spock. He is Spock. About the movie is phenomenal. I saw it in IMAX 3D, and if you have the opportunity, do that, because the IMAX, I think, has an extra 20 minutes. kind of kind of like what they did with the IMAX, The Dark Knight. They added like 20 minutes of stuff that was specifically filmed for IMAX. And they did that with The Dark Knight as well. And so it's absolutely worthwhile, to the extra expense, to see it. It was really good. I loved the 3D. It was not intrusive. It was really, really well done. My only complaint about the movie, I have a couple of complaints. My main complaint is that, and Jimmy, you're going to laugh, okay? You're going to laugh at this. I know this is a beef of yours. It ventured with some of the effects and some of the scenes towards the end, ventured a little bit into Star Wars territory.
You're kidding.
I'm concerned because now that he's done both, I am super concerned about any type of, you know, merging of the two Box in style
over.
Or tone.
Yeah, no, that's disconcerting.
Let me explain what I mean by that. Okay. What do you guys think I mean by that?
Well, I'm worried there's some type of reference from a different of the different, you know, planets or universe or whatever.
No,
I'm worried that there's some type of a reference there or that characters.
No. Nothing like that. I think it's, you know, how Star Wars is very big bang, you know, and sort of.
Yes.
You know, it's very big effects, and you know, Star Trek has always been more about story and narrative.
Story, yes.
And I think that Star Trek didn't need to go that far out on the big effects and big set pieces. I think it went a little bit over the top in some places. That where it didn't need to do that. There were places where I had to kind of my suspension of disbelief was challenged a little bit, and I was like, okay, this just isn't But I'm going to say caveat, okay? Couple of scenes where they do that, and there are only like a couple of scenes where they do that, do not in any way detract from how much I loved this movie. I thought they had a wonderful moral dilemma. There were great references back to the original series. The moral dilemma references back to the original series.
Oh,
which
good.
Is,
okay.
Like, it's so intrinsic to the story that if I even gave you a hint, I would be a spoiler.
Don't hit.
I just can't do opening weekend blockbusters anymore. I guess I'm an old fogey, but I don't want to be packed in. I don't want to wait in line. I'm going to hit some matinee probably like next Saturday at noon rather than fight the crowds.
You know, my
that's hilarious.
He's like, oh, it's opening weekend. Are you serious? We're going to this? And I'm like, but I want to write a review.
I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and I'm just trying to stay deaf and trying to.
You know,
season finales last week.
I did the Fandango thing, and we got our tickets like hours and hours in advance. We got to the theater like 40 minutes before it started. We got our seats in the IMAX, got the popcorn, got the Diet Coke. You know, we were cool, and it was great. It was a wonderful experience. And I really loved the movie a lot. There's a lot of good blockbusters coming out this summer.
I'm dying to see that. I'm worried that they're going to.
I love Russell Crowe.
Well, you know, I have a little bit of a, I grew up with Chris Reeves in the role. I mean, that's he's my Superman. I mean, he always just will be. He looked the part. He was gorgeous. I was, like, just in love with him. I remember when I saw it. I mean, I think I was, like, 12 or something. I don't know when it came out. Or 9, I think, actually, when it came out. But and then when the Superman Returns movie came out, I loved the fact that they kept Marlon Brando as Jor-El, and I loved that they kind of pretty much kept it in line with the other movies. This one, Russell Crowe, I'm sure I'm going to love it. I mean, you know, but it just kind of bothers me that they are completely redoing it. I feel like in order to tie back in to the originality of the whole movies to begin with, they should have done the same thing and kept Marlon Brando as Jor-El. That's what I really think as far as that part goes.
Yeah.
It looks really good.
But he's a younger Jor-El. And I think Brando.
Yeah, but it's not Marlon Brando. I mean, you know, come on. Marlon Brando is like the godfather. You know?
Yeah,
he's like,
no, I'm kind of looking forward to maybe Russell Crowe will come to. Actually, I've met Russell Crowe. So I've heard his band play twice. I met him once.
Oh, love Russell. He's handsome.
I love Russell Crowe. Gladiator,
in
one
his
of
his eyes. Oh, anyway. Sorry, Gibby.
That's okay. My wife has a huge crush on Russell Crowe, too, so you guys are in good
company.
I liked him enough back in the early 2000s to go see his band twice when it came to Chicago, played the House of Blues. And his band is actually quite good, and he sings, he writes a huge amount of the original material. I love some of their stuff. It's very rootsy music, and he's got a great voice. Les Mis aside, I really like Russell Crowe's voice. You should check out some of the 30 Foot of Grunt is the name of his band, and he's really quite good. Anyway, so I'm looking forward. My daughter is like dying for Ender's Game.
Yes.
She's a huge Orson Scott Card fan. She's read all the novels when she was like 10. She read all the novels. And then World War Z. She's also really looking forward to. So, which is based on the novel as well. So there's a
right.
bunch of stuff. Aftershock, I'm looking forward to. My husband hates disaster movies. I love disaster movies. I could spend all weekend watching Sci-Fi Disaster Saturday and just park myself and watch one earthquake movie and volcano movie and stuff. But I want to like butt in with a really serious thing. Of course, as you guys probably know, just south of Oklahoma City in Moore, Oklahoma, there was a real life disaster today. Terrible, I think, F5 tornado. 30 square miles of flattened urban landscape.
Oh my God.
A city of 55,000 people. And I just saw a report flash by my computer. The death is up to past 50 now. And
my God.
Yeah, that was just a couple hours ago. And it's just horrible. Okay, guys, and that storm system is heading this way, like overnight and tomorrow. So nervous here. But
Mike and Molly season finale tonight was supposed to be a tornado hitting Chicago, and they've pulled it, and they'll re-air it at some other point.
Yeah, we could have one of those tomorrow. I've been in a couple of them, and, not like
scary.
One that I heard but didn't see, that was 3 summers ago, and one that I just missed but saw the devastation driving through it in my neighborhood afterwards on my way home from college. And one was my senior year in high school. And then a couple of years ago, about 5 years ago, there was one that just just devastated my kid's school, the roof of the school. I was waiting in carpool line, and there was like a piece of the roof came sailing over just the hood of my car. I just ducked under the car.
Oh my God.
And it wasn't a tornado. It was a microburst, they said. But we didn't have power for 5 days. We didn't have phone service for 6 days.
Oh my God!
Driving from my kid's school to my job, which I taught after school, which was literally a mile away, 5-minute drive, took me an hour and a half. Just to know.
Wow.
There were trees everywhere. Everything was, it was a horrible, horrible thing. It was like, what the heck? And I saw the clouds just swirling over the top of the car. I was like, really scary. And the hail and all that. So I'm not really looking forward to tomorrow.
But we have tickets. Well, somebody just, This was just tweeted, says CNN report, says, the tornado felt like it was trying to take the iPhone out of my hand, says a storm chaser.
Wow.
Weird.
Really, we just got a tweet from a regular listener to the show who said I family in Oklahoma City. They were nowhere near more, thank goodness. Good. Please, everybody who is in Oklahoma, please stay safe. Our hearts and thoughts are with you tonight, as well as our prayers.
Yeah.
So, it's really scary stuff. Oklahoma City, Tornado Alley, all movie stuff aside, it's a really serious, serious situation. So I hope that death toll doesn't get any higher than it is, although I fear that it probably will. With that kind of little bit of sober, it seems like every other Monday when I come on, there's something serious going on and makes me feel kind of weird doing this. But so we want to talk about Once Upon a Time tonight. So was there any other? I just want to say one more thing. We have really good. We're going to see a really great band tomorrow night called Hot Club of Cowtown. They're Texas. Swing, hot jazz, Eastern-influenced roots music band. I interviewed the leader of the band last week, and we're going to go see them. And I'm going to be covering it tomorrow night at a concert at a really nice club downtown. I hope the weather stays okay tomorrow to go downtown. And so yay for Hot Club of Cowtown, and we look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow night and saying hi. So Once Upon a Time.
Oh, I was going to say real quick, if you haven't watched Doctor Who yet, you should catch up this summer because the series finale they just did, where they introduced a new Doctor, and it's going to be the special, the way they've set it up, is going to be amazing in November. So now is the time to catch up on Doctor Who.
Whoa, so who's the new Doctor?
John Hurt, the oldest guy to ever play the Doctor.
Ooh.
Oscar nominated. Did he win the Oscar? I know he's Oscar nominated.
John Hurt? Oh my God, really?
He's playing the ninth Doctor, who the Doctor has forgotten about. So it shifts the three new ones one lifetime later in the timeline, and it will be the Doctor who is not the Doctor. It's going to go into the whole war where the Doctor committed genocide and got really dark.
Wow, I remember him from the movie My Secret Garden, I think. He was in that. Am I thinking of the wrong person? I might be thinking of the wrong person. He's like a really, really wonderful actor, John Hurt.
Yeah, he's very well-known, very acclaimed.
Very well-known, accomplished stage actor.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So somebody was suggesting to me today that wouldn't it be cool if David Tennant came on and played Peter Pan?
That would be interesting, because Tennant's going to be in the 50th anniversary special, too, and Billy Piper, and it'll be a big thing. But, yeah, I think he would be a good Peter Pan for Once Upon a Time. I guess he grew up a little bit, but...
Yeah, but still, that would be fun.
Well, he's got that youthful quality, you're right.
He does. He's got that sparkle in his eye, and I really like David Tennant. And wouldn't it be fun to see him and Carlisle in scenes together?
If they
had scenes together, I don't know this. Well, I would imagine they would if Balefire is involved. So that would be a riot. It would be riotous. Okay, so the pilot. We're starting this summer long Once Upon a Time rewatch with the pilot. And I'm going to bring Meredith in because I know she's kind of hanging on in the queue. So hang on a second. Hi, Meredith.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you? You're on the air.
Thank you.
Welcome to the panel. So we're going to talk about the Once Upon a Time pilot, and I hope people watched it. If you didn't, watch it.
Actually, I just watched it right before the show started, your show.
Okay, and I watched it this afternoon because I haven't seen it for a while. And wow, now as Chrissy was telling me before this show started tonight, she remembered the reason she fell in love with this show, and me too. It was great.
It was like just from the whole get-go of it. Oh, God, it was so good.
Henry was so young. That was my first impression. Like, as soon as I turned it on, Henry was just so young.
Yeah, he has grown up. It's going to be interesting to see how much he grows over the summer.
Well, they just play a role like in Lost where they kidnap him and then you don't see him again for four seasons. And
Right. Comment in the chat room. I watched it with the commentary. You know what? And I didn't. I forgot to watch it with the commentary. It was really
amazing. Yeah, I didn't watch it with the commentary either.
Because I actually put it on. It's on Netflix. By the way, season one of Once Upon a Time is on Netflix. So if you want to
watch it
for free.
By the way, I heard that the DVD for season two comes out in August.
Yeah.
Yay!
I will get a preview. I will get a preview of it, I'm sure, at Comic-Con. So.
Oh, cool. Hey, yeah, I was going to ask you. I'll email you. Never mind.
Oh, you can ask if it's not anything private.
No, it's not really private. No, I'll ask you when I.
Okay.
When I email you it.
Okay, that's cool. So the pilot, so what was it that grabbed you guys about the pilot? And by the way, sorry, if you're in the chat room or listening online and you want to call in, the number is 718-305-6982, and you can call in and join the conversation live. So please do that, 718-305-6982. Okay, sorry. So what was it that grabbed you? Pilot.
Well, you go first.
One thing I noticed was we've gone to the big city a couple of times in recent episode season two, but it was so much more epically filmed than that pilot. Like the scene we did of Emma in Boston and everything, it looked a lot larger scale, more realistic, clearly some on location filming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just sweepingly beautiful when, that first scene, though, with Charming on the horse going in, getting to Snow and that whole, waking her up. The other thing I absolutely loved was the introduction of Emma. I had forgotten, I remembered that she was, she was a bail bondsman, whatever, but it was just hilarious to see her really in her element as far as that goes and then how Henry found her. She was shocked. and you know what else I realized, too, is that, very interestingly, Regina felt threatened from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute she saw Emma, it was just like, and the thing is, Emma picked up on that, which is why I think she decided to stay. And when she asked him at the very end, asked her, hey, do you love him? Of course I love it. Because there was the love in her eyes. I think that's what totally was like.
Well, we know Regina loves Henry, and that bothered me a little bit, too. But they set this up as Emma can read a lie, and they almost make you think Regina's lying when she says she loves Henry, but we found out later that she definitely loves him.
Yeah, I think it's much more a matter of, it isn't really that Regina can't love him, it's that simply that she doesn't have it in her to be nurturing. And I think that, she'd had him for 10 years to herself, and, I think that she kind of took him for granted a little bit. He's there, just like you do with a spouse after a while. And anyway, I think that, she realized how much she loved him after other people started wanting him.
Sure.
Yeah.
A couple things that struck me is, Regina barges into the wedding and she says, I'm going to destroy your happiness and I'm going to have my victory. But she really doesn't,
Right.
Mm-hmm.
She's no happier for it.
It cracks me up because she didn't get her happy ending at all. She hasn't gotten her happy ending.
Right. She's still lonely. No one loves her. And that's really what Regina wants, is to be loved, is to be liked. And she hasn't gotten that. And so that's one thing that struck me. I love the opening scene with Charming running across the bridge. It's not a bridge, but whatever that's called. Isthmus and on horseback. That was so sweepingly brilliant and beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And what I want to know is, where is that Charming?
Where is that? Where is
no
that?
Kidding.
I love Charming in this episode. He is like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm watching, I'm going, okay, I need to meet a guy like this. You know, I'm like, you want Charming to be your man. I mean, he was just
brave.
And the other thing that I found really interesting, he's the one that's like ready to just go and kill the queen. He's the one at the table saying, you know, hey, we need to get rid of her before this curse, you know, is enacted. And Snow is the one saying no, which I found it very interesting because it was so flipped this season.
Then when Regina shows up at their wedding, Snow grabs the sword and she's ready to go after her. Like, that's not the kind Snow that would spare her. That's
right.
You know.
That is. And Charming has to sort of go, all right, wait, hold on a second there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Snow is the one who wants to go meet Rumpel. And
No,
you're not going to do that. And she's like, yes, I am. I'm going to him. And
also the other thing, well, what I said to Barbara earlier, too, before we got on air, I was saying that, you know, that I had finally caught, after how many times I've been watching the first episode, finally caught the guard when he was taking Charming and Snow down to see Rumpel. He says, don't tell him your name because he's going to have control over you if he knows your name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very interesting because, okay, she gives him Emma the name, but how much has he been able to control her since he awakened and saw her in Storybrooke? I just am wondering.
I don't think that was the plan. I mean, the plan, Rumpel's plan, was to make the situation so that Emma would save them 28 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all he cared about.
Wondering if, because he does know her name, if there's been
even if he had that possibility, I don't think he would have used
it.
No. No.
The producers have said that he did not remember his true self until he heard her name at Granny's. They have said that repeatedly.
Right.
When
people
have asked, did he really remember all those 28 years?
But
he wrote that name over and over and over again, wanted to know it, because it was like a post-hypnotic suggestion.
Right.
The second he heard her name, his memories would come back.
Right, but even since then, when he knew her, I mean, he knew her name by the end of the first episode. He knew the name Emma. But he remembered everything after that. So, but he's not really ever used her. And I don't think Rumpel uses people only to the extent he can make a bargain with them. He won't.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't exploit people, I don't think.
Yeah.
I can't think of an example where he would have just outright exploit, well, the curse. But aside from the curse, where he's actually out and out exploited someone without them asking him to do something for them.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, did you notice that, most of the time he simply evades, you know, when it comes to his conversations, lack of information, but in that jail cell was the very first time he told a direct lie. He said that the queen invented the curse, that she was the one responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, of course, you know, he couldn't say, oh, by the way, I did it, and here's my advice for how to prevent it.
Right.
The queen is the one yielding it. You know, she's the one yielding the curse. It's her curse.
Yeah, they did say that she created it. He did actually say it like it was all her doing, not that we were in cahoots.
Right. So that is interesting. I wonder if that was because at the beginning they hadn't really figured that part out yet.
that's what I'm thinking.
We also know that Rumpel was not a major character at the very, very beginning. So he wasn't intended as a major character at the very beginning. So he was a character, a recurring character, but he wasn't a, you know.
Contract. He wasn't full-time.
Saying that, maybe they hadn't figured that part out yet, which is possible.
Well, I don't think I think it was after everybody really loved the character, the few times that we saw him in the beginning there, and then he just kind of flashed. I mean, the minute as far as I'm concerned, the minute I saw Skin Deep, I mean, that was, I mean, I loved him before that, too, but I'm just saying that was, like, solidified. It's like, okay.
For
love
me, it was
Russell.
Right. Well, you know, in the chat room, someone says in the beginning it was only supposed to be a 13-episode miniseries. I don't think that that's true. What happens with a series, what happens with TV series in their first year, they get contracted for 13 episodes or 9 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then mid-season or a couple months into the season, the studio will order, the network will order a back end to the series. So when they
mm-hmm.
were a back end to the series, they were, I don't think it was ever intended to be just a 13-episode miniseries. But
yeah.
They usually, that's pretty normal for a, in fact, what happened in the first season of House is they get 9 episodes, and then they got 3 episodes, and then they got another 4 episodes, and another 5 episodes. I mean, it was like really piecemeal with House, and they got 24 episodes. The first, I think it was the first 2 or 3 seasons, they had 24 episodes. But but it's not. It was never
the only show I know of that was ordered as a miniseries and then went on was Prison Break, was designed to be a 13-episode miniseries, and then they had to extend it for 4 seasons.
Yeah, I don't because I believe the actors got signed for multiple year contracts from the get go.
Mm-hmm.
So
on Once Upon a Time, like the standard 6 years or whatever.
Yeah. 5 years, 6 years.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh, I was just going to say, I remember I talked to Jonathan Jackson last year, right after he got Nashville on
mm-hmm.
ABC, and I remember him saying, I said, well, how many episodes are they doing? And he had said at that point that they ordered 12 episodes, and they were going to see how it was doing, and then if they picked it up for the full season, then they would order the last, 9 or
mm-hmm.
whatever it was.
That's
so,
pretty normal.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty normal for an American series. But anyway, so the other thing that, and I just fleeted past, I should have a notepad because I should be taking notes, fleeted past my mom.
Well, so, are you going to talk about the shady blue fairy lady?
She was pretty shady, lying to the whole group about Pinocchio.
Yeah. So she's, like, right there in the action, and,
mm-hmm.
She's saying, so here's this idea, and you're going to, use this wardrobe, and, she's
and like, she's the one that did it, so see, that lady, I cannot wait for season 3 because they have got to. Mother Superior, she's been in the background a little too long. We need to find out what her story is and who. I think she's the big bad.
She's bad, but I do think that she probably did have her memories for those 28 years. She did say in the episode The Stranger, where it told Pinocchio's story. She said, I need to make final preparations before the curse hits.
Right. That's right. She did. Oh, my God. I totally forgot that,
Maybe she
thinks that she's also behind the book, along with August.
Yeah.
Do you think she's Tinkerbell?
I think that she's probably the author, or that August wrote it, but she's the one who told him the stories.
Mm-hmm. It's got some of the characters for multiple roles. We haven't seen Tinkerbell yet. I wonder if she'll be connected to the Neverland story.
There was
a Tinkerbell lawn ornament in the first episode in front of somebody's house in Storybrooke.
I was just going to say that. We see Tinkerbell in the very first episode, and also notice that Emma is wishing, her birthday candle is a blue star.
Yeah, Emma has a picture of flying monkeys in Henry's book, so Oz is coming.
Notice that in her apartment that you can actually see her baby blanket?
No, I didn't.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, it's in the back.
I'm going to have to relook at that. I don't remember that.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then in that war room meeting, you can see Granny knitting it.
Yes, I noticed that. I noticed Red was in there. Yeah, Granny was knitting that. I noticed that. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. When I saw it, I'm like, that's right, she's knitting it. Okay. And then, I'm anxious to see how, I can't remember, refresh my memory. So, as far as I understood it, August / Pinocchio was supposed to take the baby with him in the wardrobe. That's the story that we got later on. The story that we just, you know, the pilot episode is just they stick the baby in it and the baby is gone.
Right, because Geppetto does it secretly. He makes
right.
a deal.
Right.
With the hidden door.
I cannot remember.
I can't remember. Was it established that the wolf that runs Emma off the road when she tries to leave town, Ruby?
We don't know that for a while. We don't know that that was the wolf, but that was one of the things I thought was really interesting.
Oh,
is that
yeah,
Emma
yeah.
is prevented from leaving Storybrooke.
Mm-hmm. But at that point, Ruby hasn't turned into a wolf in a very long time, and she can control it, and she doesn't know she is a wolf. So that made me think it wasn't her, but at the same time, that's a huge coincidence that it's a wolf that does
yeah.
it.
Yeah, no, I think it was Red. I think that was on purpose.
Oh, no, Red in The Child of the Moon, she said she hadn't transformed in all those 28 years, and you know
right.
that Jiminy Cricket stayed a human for those 28
mm-hmm.
years.
So
I think the wolf is separate.
Right,
you know, remember
Emma had...
Yeah,
but you remember Emma had already got to Storybrooke, so time had already moved, and maybe they
no, not yet. Time didn't move till the end of the episode, and Ruby didn't have her memories until the end of season one, so she couldn't have just turned into a wolf and ran out there.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Well, time only started moving at the very end. Remember, it's the very last shot of the movie.
Right. That's true.
But you know, I mean, there are lots of wolves in fairy tale and fantasy stories. Wolves
mm-hmm.
are a very common thing. Cranon in the chat room says, I think the wolf was Graham's wolf. And I think that's what everybody was kind of guessing because we didn't know that Ruby was her own wolf.
But
it was absolutely intentional. Somebody
somebody totally... I mean, it was totally, they knew that she was leaving, and, I mean, who knows? It could have been the Blue Fairy. We don't know.
Has anybody ever rewatched the first season and noticed that whenever anybody from the Fairy Tale Inn wants to leave, they all want to go to Boston? Red says she wants to go to Boston. Catherine, you know, David's wife, tries to go to law school in Boston. And
maybe that's the nearest big city.
Franklin Grell in Boston. It's like they all can sense she's there.
I think a lot of that is that Boston, I mean, it's Maine. So there aren't really any big cities, huge, like urban, sprawling metropolises
mm-hmm.
in Maine.
I'm just saying her being from Boston and them somehow
right.
also wanting to go there. The Doral
even
wanted to go to Boston.
I think a lot of it is that Boston is like the biggest metropolis. There's
mm-hmm.
not much in Vermont or New Hampshire. And as much as I love New Hampshire, I adore New Hampshire. But Manchester, New Hampshire is a small city. And the next city that's next to there is having driven that piece of land a few times. Boston is the closest metropolis. In America,
mm-hmm.
in the U.S., there are other metropolises on the other, like Halifax, on the other side of the border. But I suppose I could go to Halifax, Nova Scotia. That's why I think Boston is a convenient geographical megalopolis near Maine. That I don't think there's necessarily anything magical about Boston. I could be wrong.
Well, I'm just saying, I think that, you know, all of them in some weird way want to leave, and I think they somehow could sense the Savior was there, so may contact, you know?
I don't know.
Maybe somehow that was implanted in there, that if they want to leave, try to go to Boston.
Well, but on the other hand, Emma didn't start in Boston.
Right, and she was in a lot of different places. Boston was way down the road.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they were simply kind of programmed to go to wherever she happened to be at the time.
Maybe.
You know, they'd change their minds if she happened to be in Rhode Island or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, could be. Not saying that you're wrong, but I'm not, my opinion, I'm not sure, but I'm not the first time I would not be wrong. I would be wrong. Now that I got that out correctly. So, What was your favorite moment of the pilot? Thinking back in retrospect, now that, you know, we've seen two seasons worth of...
Well, let's see. For me, I think my favorite moment is actually that very, very opening scene with Charming racing after Snow. And then that whole forest scene was gorgeous. I love that. I think I have two scenes. That one and then the scene with Emma, you know, in her high heels, chasing after the guy.
That's great.
I mean, that was just classic, you know? Like, oh, my God, this is great. This is fabulous.
By the way, does anybody get the impression that maybe she was sort of hoping to catch her boyfriend someday that way?
Ooh, that's a good point.
Good point.
I like that.
That's a very interesting.
Now, I wanted to tell you guys, I have in my hand a copy of the pilot episode script.
Oh, I have one of those.
You do? Well, I thought it'd be interesting to maybe, you probably have all the fun stuff in it. I don't have anybody, like, telling me all this, you know, crazy stuff to do. You know, the side notes. But I was just thinking it might be kind of cool to read one of the thingies. What do you think?
Sure. Oh, read one of copyright. I'm not sure we can do that, but you can excerpt it a little bit. We don't want to violate copyright. Intellectual property.
Well, it's part of this podcast, so it doesn't hurt us if we violate. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. I actually have two scripts. I have the pilot. Somebody sent me the pilot. And I have Skin Deep. The script, the shooting script, not the transcript. I mean, I have the shooting script of Skin Deep and the pilot.
You just have, you know, like what the opening scene is supposed to be. They write it out. Yeah, that's how much it is. Okay.
Yeah, I have like a shooting script. So,
yeah, that's what this is. Yeah, it's very interesting to me the way that they write it out. How the scene, you know, what the scene and the sweeping scene is going to be, and then, you know, they're talking about, you know, what it's supposed to look like. The sun is setting, you know, there's a glow. It's just very interesting to me that they actually, I mean, obviously they see it all in their head and they got to put it on paper so that they can get what, you know, get the whole scene down. But I find it really interesting that they really do write it all out in the script. And, it's very interesting to me to do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, the shooting scripts, it's really cool. One of the reasons writer, I love reading shooting scripts, is I get all of that, what the writers were in. And I love that sense of, I actually have the entire 2 years of, I got them as a gift. I can't take them through. 2 years of Stargate Universe script. I have every single shooting script from Stargate Universe.
That's cool.
I've, like, you can read it, like, you can read scripts like a book. I mean, it's really great. I love reading shooting scripts. I was so thrilled and touched when I got the Skin Deep, the original shooting script is a PDF from, again, I can't say who. You guys know who I got it from, but I can't say who. Mm-hmm. Because I'm under a cone of silence. Because
it was Rumpel. Not the actor, the actual character. It was magic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was magic. I made a deal. I did make a deal. No, it wasn't. It was actually very much of an act of kindness on the person's part. So, anyway. So the question was asked, and somebody asked in the chat room. Sorry if this was not talked about last week. I haven't gotten to listen yet. But seeing as there's only 20 minutes, I want to ask if anyone thinks that Neil, Mulan, Aurora, and Philip were in Neverland and not in the Enchanted Forest. Now, I watched that scene again, and she says, look at the rock in the background. And she sent along a link. So hold on a second. I'm going to actually look at this link. Keep talking among yourselves, guys.
We discussed this quite a bit last week, I think.
We did discuss it last week.
Yeah, we did. My feeling is that this is that they are in fantasy land. That's what I rewatched it again. I feel like if you look at the scene, the entire scene. Hold on, I see. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the, that looks like the beach area. If I remember correctly, in the distance, you can see like where the castle would have been.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're in fairy tale land. I don't think
they're
in.
Yeah, I agree completely with Chrissy.
So,
I think it's fairy tale land.
So, Brandon, what do you see about the rock? You said look at the rock. What is it you see in the rock that?
Well, there's a rock behind.
There's something that Cranon is saying that suggests otherwise based on the rock. So what are you seeing, Cranon, or Cranon, or however you pronounce your name? What do you see in that rock that suggests otherwise? I had originally thought Neverland, and I corrected myself. I stood corrected.
Too convenient.
Yeah. It is awfully convenient.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, considering how hard it was for Emma and Snow to get home and lack of beans and lack of portals, I think it's probably going to be up to Rumple and his crew to get more magic beans in Neverland and probably get to the Enchanted Forest.
Yep, I think that's
yeah.
And vice versa. Yeah, there's got to be something else that happens.
Right.
At some point, their main characters are going to want to make their way back to Fairy Tale Land to at least, I don't know, check in. They know there's survivors, they know there's some land left. So, I mean, they may go there totally not looking for Neil, but for some other reason, because they don't think Neil's dead.
No.
Yeah, well, I think since Aurora was still under sleeping curse, and now more recently so is Prince Charming, they'll probably find out about him same way they did before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through the fiery red room.
That's possible.
Right.
Charming can tell them, oh, by the way, I just got a message. He's there, he's alive, and when we're done here, we could go there.
Well, exactly. Oh. I mean, it's going to be interesting. The other thing I wanted to mention that I was, like, surprised about, you know, we didn't see the giant during the finale. He was at Storybrooke working with the dwarves to...
They do that a lot with the reoccurring characters that just aren't there when they should be. Like, my biggest pet peeve is that Grumpy's girlfriend is never there. But
availability actors.
Okay, yep, exactly.
So, guys, so in the chat room, Cranon responds, I also feel that the globe would have picked up where Neil was and not Henry. Remember, they think Neil is dead. And they did not use they did use Rumple's blood and not Emma's.
Yeah,
maybe
they'll
go to Neil first then instead of Henry accidentally and then have to find their way to Henry later.
Yeah, so that is
they could do that.
No, I think Henry's in the more immediate danger, don't you? I mean, when they had Bay,
they said,
get to live, which means they're planning on killing Henry.
But we don't know how the globe works.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Rumple doesn't know how the globe works.
Well, that's right, because he took it from Cora. Cora had it. So,
maybe he previously had it, and then she stole it.
I mean, Henry is Rumple's blood as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both his direct descendants.
Could be either way, or maybe because of the two, it'll split in the middle, and half of them will get tossed to one realm, and the other half to the other.
Unless they're all the same.
I feel like they learned their lesson this season. I don't think they're going to split it up like they did before.
I hope not.
I know. I mean, it really does do disservice to the entire show. I mean, after watching, like I said, the first episode is just so incredible.
Oh,
all the core characters are there.
Neil is officially a full-time cast member next season, so they are split, even if they drop Ruby and Belle, as I think they very well might.
And, guys, I don't know if we knew this last Monday, but I know it's something that we've talked about many times, is that the show is being split up into two half seasons.
Yeah, yep.
to have.
I did also hear it's going to be 24, not 22 episodes.
Yeah, but now I've heard that was a mistake, that it is actually 22.
Oh. Yeah, it's two 11-episode arcs, right?
11-episode
arcs. They're going to split in half.
Yeah, so, it, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they did this year, too. They did the 11-episode arc, and then...
The brilliant thing was they were going to stick Once Upon a Time in Wonderland as filler, so you had new content the entire time, and they've abandoned that idea, and now they're both running, starting in the fall.
Right. But there is going to be, what's going to happen is that the episodes are going to run consecutively. And unlike...
Thank God.
Yeah, unlike the all the with a series like this one, it was recognized it needs to run in complete segments. So there won't be the kind of playing around a storyline and, you know, being to and fro, just like we're on the sea. So that actually is kind of nice, I think.
Well, there was discussion this week with all the upfronts and such that the networks are starting to plan for a full year season instead of a September through May. And they ordered more pilots than before, and they have focused, they're starting to try some more serial stuff. So that could be part of that whole trend.
Yeah, that they're doing half seasons, and they're running. Mm-hmm. That's a very a la 24. By the way, I just got an email today that ABC has its pilots up for the press. Some of them, Wonderland is not up yet. So I'm looking
forward. Yeah, neither was Marvel as of the S.H.I.E.L.D. pilot as of this morning, unfortunately.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of them. Fox has its pilots up.
Mm-hmm.
ABC has its pilots up. CBS is kind of funky with theirs in the press. I always have to cajole them to get pilots. So last year they sent me all of them on a screener, which was kind of nuts. But,
I'm so excited. 24 is coming back next year, too, by the way. Yay.
Yep.
What is?
I was so excited. Did you guys watch Touch? I meant to ask you guys, did you ever watch Touch?
No, I never watched it.
Yes, I did. And they had it canceled it a couple hours, and they were already announcing 24, so.
Well, I mean, you know, they canceled it. Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is the first season, it was just not working. They revamped it the second season. But that very last episode was like, oh, my God, he's going all Jack Bauer on the guy. Woohoo! And then I hear that 24 is coming up. So I'm like, thank God. I mean, there is a need for that show. I'm sorry. I mean, well, it's been sorely missed. I mean, if he's going to do a show, might as well do 24. I mean, why bother with something different when the whole thing works? So I'm anxious for that and to see Wonderland. I'm really can't wait. And I loved... What did you guys think of the trailer? Wasn't it great? It really
was.
It was wonderful.
You didn't watch it?
No, I try not to watch any trailers or previews. Or, I don't watch the previews at the end of the episodes. I was not
all that keen on it, and then I saw the trailer, and I actually thought it was really good. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the pilot of it. We're down to the last 1 minute and a half of the episode, believe it or not. We need to see the episode for next week, which to me, I think we should do episode 2.
I agree.
Right. And we'll do episode 2. And then after that, the week after that, I want to skip. You're going to kill me because I don't want to do all of season 1.
Right.
I want to skip to episode 4 after next week.
Yeah.
So I was not all that keen on episode 3, as I recall. Okay.
I think it was like episodes 2 through 5 I didn't care for. So.
Yeah. Well,
episode 4 is good.
Episode 4 isn't that Desperate Souls?
No, that was The Price of Gold.
The Price of Gold. I guess.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
The one with Cinderella.
With our friend of the show Jesse Schramm, who's been on the show twice. Yeah, Jesse. It's great to see her on the trailer for Falling Skies that was shown in the pre-movie stuff yesterday for Star Trek. And Jesse is a friend of the show. I've interviewed her, I think, 2 or 3 times. Once she was on the show once. And she's a local girl and she's a sweetheart. And, so we definitely have to do Price of Gold, and, maybe I'll see if I can get into her.
I can get her on the show to talk about the episode with us.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That'd be great.
Fun. So I'm gonna contact her because she said she'd come back anytime. So
let me
contact her publicist. I have her email address and her phone number, but I will contact her through your publicist and see if I can get her on in 2 weeks.
All right. Cool.
So thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we will see you guys next week.
And don't forget, you're finally going to write an article on the thing you love most.
I promise. Yes, I will. I promise. I will do that. I will absolutely do that after I watch it again. All right. Thanks, everyone. See you guys next week.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, Barbara.
Bye.